Okay, here we go. For today's Freedom Song for, now you probably never, those of you that know something about the story of the book of Ruth, you probably never connected Naomi, Ruth, and Janis Joplin. That probably wasn't a, and if you knew who Janis Joplin, but this is a great song for about freedom.
Bobby McGee.
And it's a great song, I think, for Ruth and Naomi, so.
I think Naomi's new name was Janis. Yeah, I know, when you put a sign, if I bring it, it says, yes, this is Bible study.
What year did Janis die?
The same year as everybody else. What?
Jimi
Hendrix said 67?
Yeah, okay.
Is that right? 60.
I was wondering if it was.
When did Jimi Hendrix die? 67? Most people know that one. So I think so.
Yeah,
a whole bunch of people.
Day of the Music Day. Where's
your phone?
Yes. Year.
Well,
well,
it's here,
but
we can look it up ourselves here. But no, it's fine.
It's not earlier. Yeah. Earlier, yeah.
Earlier?
Buddy.
Oh, wait, Holly, that's earlier. Yeah. Anyway, so I picked the story for Ruth and Naomi, which we're going to look at today for a whole lot of reasons. And one is because freedom's just nothing left to lose, which is about Naomi's attitude when they come back into the land of Israel. And because they've lost everything. We'll look at the story. And but it's also about relationships getting lost and ended and trying to find a home and all the things that are very much part of the story of Ruth and Naomi as they journey back from Moab to Israel. So in my weird brain sitting around trying to figure this out, it's just but it's just fun to listen to.
It was 1970.
She died at 70?
Yeah.
Oh.
I thought it was.
Good. Okay, so we're going to look at the book of Ruth. You know where it is. Go Joshua Judges Ruth, which is also a great album by Lyle Lovett if you want more country rock kind of stuff. So the book of Ruth is
page 440.
There. It's kind of what, depending on which Bible you have.
Oh.
Ruth is kind of inserted here. There's actually a complete narrative that goes from Genesis through 2 Kings that talks about all of the beginnings up through the monarchy for Israel. It tells the whole story. And in the middle of this, the authors of the Septuagint, who knows that word? If you look, sometimes you'll see a little note in your Bible that has the Roman numeral 70, LXX. And that stands for a group of people called the Septuagint. They gathered a bunch of Hebrew scholars about 200 BC in Jerusalem to translate the Hebrew scriptures into Greek. So the Septuagint is the Greek version of the Hebrew scriptures. And it's very important because like when Paul writes in his letters and he quotes the Old Testament, he quotes from the Septuagint. So sometimes if you're looking in your Bible and you might be reading Paul's letters and you see that quote from the Old Testament, then you go back in your Bible and you look at that Old Testament passage and you go, you know, what was Paul doing? Well, the reason is because you've got an English translation of a Greek translation of the Hebrew Scriptures in Paul's letters, and in your Bible you have an English translation of the Hebrew Scriptures. So there's one extra step in there. But it was the editors of the Septuagint that placed Ruth after the book of Judges, and it was a story that had been around. People have different views of when it was written because the language is sort of, it's very simple, it's a story. And but it's kind of interesting because what the child that Ruth has at the end, Obed, is the grandfather of David. So some people think this was written just before the monarchy when David became king, somewhere between Saul and David, to establish David's ancestry. But some people think it was written after the exile. Because after the exile, people had a lot of trouble with trying, they figured they could just all be perfect Jews. Just follow the law to the letter. Nothing like the exile would ever happen again. So if you read the books of Ezra and Nehemiah, which are post-exilic sort of how we're going to do this book, you'll see that they have like a lot of rules against intermarriage and all kinds of things. All the laws Jesus runs into in the Gospels, all whatever, 480 million that every Jewish male has to follow every day, they all get developed at the time of the exile, after the exile, I mean. So some people think they put Ruth in there because Ruth is wonderful. Ruth is the most faithful Israelite in the entire Old Testament. Nobody does being Jewish better than Ruth. She's perfect in every regard. And where's Ruth from? Moab. She's a Moabite woman. She's not Jewish at all in any way, shape, form, or nature except for by marriage. So it's an interesting story. There are a lot of some other books that do this, make the same kind of point about how God does not just love Israel. God loves all the peoples of the earth. And that's in the Old Testament. So Ruth is one of those books. Jonah is another one of those books. Isaiah 40:55 is another one. And the ninth chapter of Amos, which was a post-exilic addition to the book of Amos. So that also does the same kind of thing, points out. So you can check those out. But so Ruth is a really, really interesting book that way, and it's wonderful to look at. When I was looking at it in terms of freedom, I was thinking also about other issues that are before us in our world today. Yesterday, when we looked at the Exodus story, what was the presenting issue that got Joseph's brothers to Egypt? Jacob and our sons. What was that?
Famine.
Right. A couple weeks ago in church, if you were in where you heard the 1 Kings 17 read about Elijah and the widow of Zarephath, what was going on in Zarephath?
Famine.
Right. And the book of Ruth begins with the fact that the people of Israel were in famine. And that's why Naomi and her family move, and her husband move, and their sons move to Moab. So but that's also something that we have going on in our world today, isn't it? People are looking for food, and they move. They try to find places where they can farm. They try to find places where there's water, you know, things too. But also, this is a wonderful story about immigration and refugees. Because first of all, Naomi and her husband Elimelech and their sons are refugees in Moab. They leave the family and go to Moab to that. So I think a lot of it's like, you know, it's Israeli refugees in Moab is not unlike Syrian refugees in Lebanon, for example. And, you know, where they long for, if you watch, it's all, I mean, the Syria thing's so awful, you don't even want to put your brain around it sometimes. But when they interview people on TV, like, you know, about the Syrians, and all, what you hear almost always is this longing for home. Home that's beat. Destroyed and completely bombed all this stuff too, but when we go back to Syria, or when they develop like other refugee communities do that have come to, or immigrant communities in the United States, and did anybody grow up in a particularly immigrant culture in the U.S.? Here, anybody?
My mom was from Canada.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And did you guys get Bibles? There's some right out there on that rack that's right in the...
My first 4 years of teaching high school were in a community that had a fairly significant immigration.
Great, thank you. Great, perfect. We're in the book of Ruth, which is sort of in the front there, Joshua, Judges, Ruth. And I grew up in a very Norwegian community in Seattle, and my mother spoke no English until she went to school and all that kind of stuff. So. With still traces of all that and how we did things and stuff like that. And These are different Norwegians than the ones that came to Minnesota. I just want to be really clear about that. There are two immigration folks. We won't go there, though. But I think that the story of Ruth and Naomi does present us with thinking about these matters of refugees and immigration and all things that are very much in front of us, not only in our own country right now, but throughout the world. And they can teach us some things about how to do it. And well, like I said, I titled this session, "That Free Women Heal Communities." And I think that Ruth and Naomi bring that kind of healing power to their journey and to what happens to them when they get to Israel. So let's look at the story. Well, do you tell me what you know about Ruth? We have a little bit. What do you know about Ruth and Naomi?
They're widows.
They're widows, both of them. So who was Ruth's husband to begin with? Not his name, but what was
Naomi's
written?
Son.
Naomi's son, right. Yeah. And what was the name of the other?
Orpah.
Orpah, right. And I understand that like Oprah Winfrey, she was supposed to be named, this is her name comes from this name, but they couldn't spell it right, so it ended up being Oprah. I had a woman in the congregation I served in faith whose name was Orpha, and it was the same deal. She said they looked in the Bible and saw this Orpah name and it ended up being Orpha. So anyway, so we have Orpah and Ruth who are married after Naomi and her husband Elimelech go to Moab with their sons. Then they marry these Moabite wives. And the rule, the pattern of marriage was if your husband died, it's called levirate marriage, and if your husband died, his brother was compelled to marry you. And the issue there is keeping the gene pool going. So essentially, if I was married to someone who died, and then I married his brother, actually my child would inherit from my husband, my first husband. It's like you're really married still to the first person you married, but you're kind of married to the other one. It's quite a complicated thing. But they did practice it all the time. It's the common way to do it. And that was the practice throughout all the ancient Near East, so it wouldn't have been an unfamiliar one to Ruth and Orpah as well. So you look at the story, but it's also important to know where Elimelech and Naomi were from. Where were they from? What's the name of the town? Look, it's right, first thing, first verse.
Bethlehem,
they're from Bethlehem. So that sounds familiar? A little town of, and things like that. The town where Jesus is born, which is the city of David, it gets called in the book of Luke. So it's, and so they go off to Moab, they marry, do other things. And this wonderful passage, they come with her daughters-in-law, and it says in 6, then she and Naomi started to return with their daughters-in-law after their husbands died. They had no way to, unless a man supports you, in the Old Testament culture, unless you have a husband or a father or a brother who's willing to support you, you don't have any chance. Women couldn't own property, they couldn't work, they couldn't earn money, they couldn't do any of that stuff. So she'd heard in the country of Moab, the Lord had considered people giving them food. So the famine's over in Judah, so she can go back. So she set out from the place where she was living, I mean 1:7. She and her two daughters-in-law, and they went on their way to go back to the land of Judah. But Naomi says, you know, go back Ishvi to your mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you. You've dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find security each in the house of your husband. And she kissed them, and they wept aloud. They loved their mother-in-law. There's wonderful, wonderful images in this. And I said, no, we'll go with you. And he says, no, go back. And then she says, I'm not going to have any more sons. And even if I had sons, do you want to wait until they grow up before you can marry again and have children? No. Go back and find some nice Moabite guys and get married there. And anyway, Orpah turns back. But Naomi, and then in 14 it says, they wept a lot again. Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. So Naomi tries again with Ruth. She says in 15, see, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people, to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. And then Ruth says this wonderful passage.
about faithfulness and loyalty. And anybody have this at their wedding? No. It's a wonderful passage, whatever the circumstance, it's a wonderful passage about faithfulness and loyalty, but I always sort of found it a little bit amusing when it's read at a wedding, because it is Ruth promising this to her mother-in-law. So, but that's probably a really good thing, actually.
I like that.
Yeah, somebody's got a daughter, yeah, so your daughter-in-law, yeah, maybe I should have had this, should have had our daughter-in-law read that. Anyway, so, but then Ruth says these wonderful words, and they are very, do not press me to leave you, nor turn back from following you. Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die. There will I be buried. May the Lord do thus and so to me, and more as well, if even death parts me from you. And then it says, when Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, I think after the after those lines, I think Naomi said, fine, yeah, good, got it, good. Then they get there, they go to Bethlehem, and I think a really poignant part of this is in 19, when it says, when they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them, and the women said, is this Naomi? She's been gone a long time. And she's had a hard time, and she's coming back. And they're going, is this Naomi? And then Naomi has this wonderful comment about it. So don't call me Mara, which means bitterness, for the Lord has dealt bitterly with me. I went away full, the Lord brought me back empty. You know, she went away with a husband and two sons, they're all dead. And the Almighty has brought calamity upon me. So then it says, so Naomi returned together with Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, who came back with her from the country of Moab. And in this story, they say over and over again that Ruth is from Moab. So they want to make the point that this wonderful Ruth, who was David's grandmother, is from Moab. You know, she's not Jewish. So then Naomi had a kinsman on her husband's side. So this great story. And actually, Naomi is, like I said, free women heal communities. When you think about the freedom Naomi has, she doesn't have any obligations. She's hoping they'll take care of her. They're hoping she's here. But she's thinking all the time. And I always think that Naomi goes back, even when she knows Ruth's going with her, and she's going, you know, there's that guy Boaz. Mm-hmm. He's a family member. Let's see what we can do here. But, so in 2, so his name was Boaz, starts at the beginning, family of Elimelech, same as Naomi's husband's family. And they need food, so Ruth goes to glean. And she came and she gleaned behind the reapers. And this is, another important feature of this for us, I think, is that gleaning is another important way in all around the world that people are able to find something to eat. And it's a common practice in many countries and cultures. And in fact, in a lot of our cities, do any of your communities call the people that go to the grocery stores and get the stuff that's pulled and stuff like that for your food bank gleaners? Some places, I've heard that's that practice of getting the food for the grocery store. I mean, it's a matter of driving your truck up there and letting them load it up, but it's the practice of gleaning as well to fill the food banks of our own communities. And then it goes, and she goes and she gleans behind the reapers. And then as it happened, in verse 3, as it happened, she came to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, right? It was the family of Elimelech. Then Boaz came out of town into the fields. And he said to the reapers, the Lord be with you. They answered, the Lord bless you. Then Boaz said to his servant who was in charge of the reapers, to whom does this young woman belong? The servant said, well, we know her. She's the Moabite. So once again, they're bringing the change on this. Who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. and she said, please let me glean. So she came and she's been on her feet early this morning until now without resting even for a moment. So then Boaz talks to Ruth. Do not go to glean any other field. Leave this one. He wants to keep her away from other fields where she might be harassed by some of the men in the field. And
He tells her, she tells her where to get a drink, and in 10, she falls prostrate with her face to the ground and said to him, why have I found favor in your sight that you take notice of me when I am a foreigner? So Ruth really knows who she is, and she knows what the issues are about her being not from the land of Judah. And so she's very careful along how she's doing this. But then Boaz says, all you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told me. So the word is out that Ruth has been blessed in her relationship with Naomi. Naomi has been taken care of by Ruth. So they go on with this. And then she says, can you find favor in your sight? And then Boaz gives her some bread and invites her to dip her morsel in the sour wine that was given to the workers and stuff like this too. And this is kind of the beginning of their relationship, for sure. You know, because it's kind of actually a rather intimate kind of meal thing that's going on here. And then when they're done, when she's done, she gets up and Boaz instructs the men, let her glean even among the standing sheep. So what's he letting her do?
Take some of the harvest.
Take some of the harvest. Yeah, she doesn't even need to wait until they've knocked it all down and come up and pick up the rest of the grain. She gets to get in there and get the stuff right off the stock. So, and then he says, in 16, you also must pull up some handfuls for her from the bundle and leave them for her to glean. In other words, he sends her into the standing, but also tells the guys, just knock off a few grains and, you know, leave it there so she sees it. You know, so he's taking care of her all the way around. And when she bared her, she gleaned, she had an ephah of barley. It's about 20 quarts. Was that 5 gallons or so that she gleaned?
Pretty good bundle.
Pretty good bundle, yep. And she takes it back and...
Wasn't it biblical? Wasn't it commanded that they leave something for the widows
yes,
and orphans?
Yes, leave it behind? Yeah, it was a practice. That's what she says, let me go glean, because she knew that somebody would let her do that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's all these regular practices that Naomi is counting on behalf of her and Ruth. One is the practice that widows were to be cared for.
Yeah.
Whether it's by their family or by other people, the widows were to be cared for. So Naomi figures if they go back and they're both widows, someone's going to take care of them. And then they also, there's the laws of the gleaning and all this stuff too. People, this is a good community that's doing all this pretty well. So... Then the plot thickens here in 19, where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you. So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked, the name of the man with whom I worked today is Boaz. Then Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, blessed be the Lord. And you can kind of see Naomi going, yes! That's exactly the right person. Anyway, blessed be the Lord, it's great. Whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead. And then Naomi says, well, this guy's our relative, our nearest kin. And and Naomi says, go back there and do that, that's fine. And then Naomi and Ruth start plotting. This is in 3. Naomi says to Ruth, my daughter, I need to seek some security for you. So they're not going to play a trick on Boaz, but they're going to kind of edge him to do something that... so that he and Ruth will marry. So they have Ruth go to the threshing floor. You can read this whole story on your own. I hope you will read Ruth. It'd be a nice thing to read today. And so the threshing floor, this is like, I was talking to somebody about wine harvest yesterday, to Marcus, and he was talking about doing the crush and stuff. And any kind of type of, anybody grew up in a farming community where there was a regular harvest? And after the harvest, there's often a party, is there not? I mean, some depend on the community too, but very often. So after all the grain was harvested and stuff, they threshed it, the hard work of doing that, big party.
Harvest festival, that's right.
So it says, when Boaz had eaten and drunk, and he was in a contented mood, I like this, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain, and she came stealthily and uncovered his feet. Uncovering his feet, there's another, do you remember the story of Noah? Who remembers the story of Noah? Do you? I mean, Noah does great with the ark and all this stuff too, Until then, they all get back on land, and he says, well, everything's fine now, and he gets drunk, and his sons go and uncover his feet. That's the story. And that's, you know, he becomes naked in front of his sons, and it's bad news.
Naked feet?
Naked. Well, it's a euphemism for other bodily parts. But anyway, so and this is, so Ruth goes and lays down, and essentially goes down and lays down with Boaz. But Boaz says, well, this is all very nice, Ruth, and this is fine, and I'm your kinsman, but guess what? There's one person that's a closer kinsman. So we have to deal with him first. So they just live there. And what's interesting is this word next of kin that's coming up all the time. There's multiple times in the next series. And the next of kin word in Hebrew is, and you see the note in your Bibles, most of them, but essentially it's the word for redeemer. It's not Messiah, but it means the person who has the right to redeem. The person who essentially is given the key to unlock the door. It's the person who can let someone go free. It's the person who can free the slave, the take away the servant, the shackles, do all that stuff. That's what the next of kin does. That's the responsibility of the next of kin, is to free the family members who need to be free. So it's a really, it's a cool, it's too bad they didn't have another word in English for the Hebrew word for next of kin, because it really is a very, very powerful image here. And so he goes and negotiates with this other cousin or whatever, and that all happens in 4. And at the end of it, Naomi, Ruth has gone back to Naomi after the night with Boaz and explains what's going on. And she says, just hold it. He's going to work this out today. And he does. In chapter 4, he goes to the gate, which was the place where they make judgments. And he gathered about 12 other guys to talk about it and all these men. And so then he says to the next of kin, the right to redeem, that Naomi sent the parcel of land who belonged to Elimelech. And then he tells the guy, but here's the rub. If you buy the parcel, you have to marry Ruth. Because she comes with the deal. She's attached to the land. I mean, we don't want to go into all the implications of the old, you know, these ancient cultures and how they treat, how women.
It's like a remediation project.
Very much like a remediation, right. So this part, you get all this, it comes along. So the parcel of land, Ruth comes along with it. And so the guy says, oh, don't want to go there because I think that'll get in the way of my own inheritance. So he wants to, like, make sure his own sons get their full inheritance and doesn't want to interrupt that with another person in there, even though technically it would only come from Elimelech's land. But still, he says, no, I don't want to do that. So also, so Boaz, you can have the land, and you can marry Ruth. So it's a wonderful, wonderful. Then they have this trick in 7. This is interesting. In custom, when Israel concerning redeeming exchange, confirm a transaction, one took off a sandal and gave it to the other. So he took up his sandal and gave it to Boaz, and it says in 4:9, today you have witnesses that I have acquired from the hand of Naomi all that belong to Elimelech and all that belong to Chilion and Mahlon, the sons. I have acquired Ruth, the Moabite, the wife of Mahlon, to be my wife, to maintain the dead man's name on his inheritance, to order that the name of the dead may not be cut off from his kindred and from the gate of his native place. Today you are witnesses. Then all the people who were at the gate along with the elders said, we are witnesses. So this is all done in big public speech. It's kind of like the wedding. Anyway, may the Lord make the woman who's come into your house like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the house of Israel. And then they have all this speech about all these good people that bore children to everybody. So it says in 13, Boaz took Ruth, she became his wife. They came together, the Lord made her conceive, and she bore a son. And this, I love this part. Nobody's going to Boaz and going, great, you have a new son. Nor is anybody going to Ruth and saying, look at your wonderful son. Who do they go to?
Naomi.
The women said to Naomi. These are the same women who wondered who she was when she came back. Blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without the right, somebody with the right to redeem. The next of kin. And may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. For your daughter-in-law who loves you, who is more to you than seven sons. I mean, there is no other woman in the Old Testament about which things like this get said, except for maybe Hannah in 2 Samuel. Has borne him. Then Naomi becomes his nurse. And it says, the women of the neighborhood gave him a name, saying, a son has been born to Boaz and Ruth. No, a son has been born to Naomi. And they named him Obed. He became the father of Jesse, the father of David. So it's a wonderful, wonderful story. And it's a wonderful story about these women who are honored for finding their way back into a community. And it just, and it's for the people of Israel, this is huge, isn't it? That this is David's ancestry. Do all these things. And I just love it that after all this right to redeem stuff and everything like that too, it's Naomi that's honored for all this. I mean, they haven't forgotten about Elimelech and Mahlon and Chilion and Boaz and all those people, but it is Naomi that's honored for keeping this, for healing this family, bringing it back together, restoring its life in the community. So that's kind of a long ramble here through the book of Ruth, but anybody have any thoughts or comments about these women and this great story and their freedom? Or did I just shut you down by keeping talking?
I guess I struggle to see their freedom outside of the men.
Yeah, it's hard to. Yeah. But could they have?
Could they have had freedom?
Yeah.
Not socially.
No, not socially. But I think by the fact that, like I say, that the storyteller lifts up Naomi at the end without even mentioning her name says a great deal. So when you taught this book based on family
systems
thing, mm-hmm. Do they do pretty well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and it's also, I mean, as much as the women are so tied up with the men, Boaz is such a man of integrity.
Yes.
He has every opportunity to take advantage.
Yeah, and doesn't.
And doesn't,
yeah.
Ever. So there's freedom and, I guess, relationship. Maybe that's the...
Yeah, that's what I see where they do that. And also, even the first next of kin is also fairly... has great integrity, because he wouldn't have needed to say all that about... he could have just married Ruth and gotten out of it and ignored her and maybe dumped her eventually, because she was a Moabite. You know, so... Which is the other huge part, is that this... essentially immigrant in their community is totally honored by the community and by her family.
This sort of like tangentially reminds me of one of the gospel things we read just a couple weeks ago about where they're saying that there was good left in the grapes yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that could have been the end of their story, but there was redeeming good left.
Exactly.
Here in this,
yeah. Yeah.
In this branch.
Yeah. Yeah.
It could have ended there.
Yeah.
But it didn't.
Well, that's interesting, because that sort of branch image keeps going into,
yep.
And the imagery that gets used for Jesus out of David's line.
Yeah.
So like if you see a lot of Advent clip art for bulletins and things, anyways.
It's
all, just a second, Ashley. That there's just a tree with one leaf on it. That's the branch of Jesse. Yeah, Ashley.
I walked in a little bit late, but there's this piece of that story that had me floored, because it seemed to be totally against what I am aware of as their social norms. You said, uncovering his feet was a euphemism for she lay down with him.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Which, isn't that like a big social faux pas? Like they're not married yet?
Yeah, kind of.
And that was just totally like brushed by. It's like, this is the time it's okay because it worked out well and he's the heir, the ancestor of all these people. And, yeah.
Well, but the fact, like, whatever your name, Elizabeth just said, you over there, and, you know, framed in the light, anyway. Like Elizabeth just said, one of the features of the story is that Boaz and the other men in the story actually function with great integrity. There are terrible stories about men and women all around this story. In Joshua, in Judges, you know, but this one's not. And coming up in 1 Kings. So, I think, is that helpful a little bit?
Yeah.
It's just interesting that she took advantage of him. But she tried to. But he sent her out.
He what?
They didn't sleep together. Right.
She tried to.
In her desperation, she threw herself at
him.
Oh,
okay,
thank
you. That's what
he said.
Okay, that's helpful. Yeah, right.
No.
She planned this, and that would have been, she did plan this.
Okay.
And it was intentional.
Okay, but it didn't quite work out. She said
no. No, because he had too much integrity.
Yeah.
Okay. So he did, yeah. So, but it wasn't that Ruth didn't have integrity.
Yeah.
And this would have been common practice, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, so...
So it was okay for a woman to uncover a man?
It was okay for a man and woman to be together before they were officially married.
Oh.
And then they got married.
As long as that's the plan.
Yeah.
They're engaged.
They're engaged. They're engaged, and we have to go back and look at all the stories about that. But there's there are plenty of examples of women, for example, that were sometimes men and women would lie together, and if the woman didn't conceive, then she was sent back to her father before they were actually married and stuff. There are plenty of examples of that all through the Old Testament. The Old Testament is not a great, like people always say, let's have marriage according to the Bible. I don't want any of those marriages. That's bad. Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you.
But she lay at his feet, it says.
Yeah, but feet's a euphemism for other parts of the Bible. We got a big explanation about this recently. I heard a lecture by Diane Jacobson, who's a retired Old Testament professor from Luther Seminary, who's writing a good book on Ruth. I don't think it's quite out yet, but it'd be worth reading. And that's part of, I mean, I knew that, but then she sort of really rang the changes on that. So how important that was. Yeah.
So as an ancestor of David,
yes,
an important point that would be made to the Jewish people is that it may have involved a Moabite, but it was a Jewish father.
Yeah, but if Jewish people trace their ancestry through their mothers.
Isn't that funny?
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's how you know you're Jewish. If your mother's Jewish, you're Jewish.
So.
That's what's remarkable about this story. David's great-grandmother was Jewish, was Moabite.
Was not Jewish.
So in other words, the point the story makes about God is that
God's not Jewish.
There we go.
I don't know.
But that God's work is not dependent on our particular racial lineage or blah, that kind of stuff. That God's at work
in all creation.
Yeah. But like I said, this is one of these places in the Old Testament that really proclaims that. This in Jonah, Isaiah 40-55, 9th chapter of Amos.
And in the genealogy in the Gospel of Matthew,
mm-hmm.
Ruth is one of two women that are named.
Named, yep.
Which
is Ruth. Yep.
And the other one is Rahab.
Yep.
The harlot.
Exactly, Rahab the harlot's the other one. Yep.
And Tamar.
And Tamar, yeah.
But if a woman determines the heritage, why do they here then not mention women? They say, they say Obed and Jesse and now to David.
Because all the inheritance comes through the men. It's tricky stuff.
Okay.
The land.
It is 4:45, so... we can be done, and or you can keep talking or whatever you want to do, but technically the session is over. Tomorrow, John 8, 31-36.
So would you say one more time, Nancy, your understanding of freedom in this, in the Ruth story,
is the women, well, it's the freedom, you know, it's Bobby, me and Bobby McGee. It really is. It's
nothing left to lose.
Freedom is, you know, freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose. And that's how Naomi and Ruth get into the land. Naomi's going, I might as well go, but my husband's dead, my sons are dead, I might as well go back to Judah and hope for the best, kind of. But she makes her free choice. She could have stayed in Moab. You know, it's really clear that Naomi and Orpah were going to take care of their mother-in-law, right? So even if they'd all stayed in Moab, that probably would have worked. But Naomi wanted to go home, and I think that that's her free choice, her free act, and her freedom is then her ability to trust also that something will, that her action will produce something. And it did. Does that make sense, Sarah, a little bit?
Yeah.
Not quite.
Yeah. Naomi did choose, and then her daughters
chose also. Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't know how they made a living in Moab either, but I mean, you know.
Same stuff, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm struck by near the end where it says Obed is the son of Naomi.
Yes. Yep.
Is that to keep it in the Jewish line?
No, I think it just honors Naomi. I mean, you won't find much anything else like this anywhere in the Old Testament. I mean, it just honors Naomi. I mean, Naomi's actually the main character in the book.
Right.
Yeah. Naomi comes back. Naomi helps engineer this little relationship with Boaz, with Ruth, you know, say, aha. And I think everybody honors Naomi all the way through. What?
The ultimate Jewish woman.
Exactly. She
yeah.
was. It's kind of fun. I mean, she sort of goes, the field of Boaz, huh? Let's
right.
see what we can do about that. I mean, really, that one verse in there, the exclamation, really is like Naomi, just like I said, just kind of
right.
going, yes! You're going to marry the right person, Ruth, I promise you, right? So anyway, Sarah, I will admit that I just tried this as a little, it was a new thought to me about them being free women. But also how I still believe that women that are free help heal communities. I think that that's a real thing. I think if there's any way, multiple ways, and that women are constrained in their ability to do what they need to do to take care of their own things. But when they're free from those constraints, amazing things can happen. So that's, it may be a really kind of screwy thought, but I just thought I'd try it on here. So.
Thank you.
It's a good way to think about that story.
Yeah, I thought it was a different perspective.
It's
yeah.
something to mull over in terms of, I mean, these women really had to figure out what next.
Yeah, exactly.
In their lives.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like, oh, I think I'll just run over to Bethlehem that way and I'll know that now. You know, it's just,
yep.
These are huge.
Yeah, big things, yep.
Yeah. It's scary to be free, too.
Yes, very scary, yes.
One of the things I think is so fascinating about this book is that it's the first in the Old Testament where God is not like a first-person character.
Right.
They reference God.
Yes, of the Lord.
But God isn't talking, you don't see or encounter God directly. And I think that not that they're free from God, because they still acknowledge God's presence in their lives, but that the relationship with each other, I mean, that beautiful Ruth's song to Naomi.
Yes.
That's the relationships that are lifted up are the what can happen in healthy families or in commitment and loyalty.
Because, you know, I mean, Ruthie, at the beginning, you know, Naomi acknowledges that if they go back to Moab, they're going back to their gods, right?
Mm-hmm.
She says that. And then, but then what Ruth's little fidelity statement to Naomi includes, your God will be my God. I mean, she's not only saying, I'm going to stay in this relationship, but I'm going to join your people and I'm going to be a person of your faith. I mean, it's remarkable at every level.
Conversion experience.
Yeah, for her, for Ruth, yeah. And I'll build out of, like you say, out of this relationship, which had become so dear and precious to both of them. Yeah.
I thought a lot of widows starved to death.
Yeah, they did. They didn't have support or have, except they had to be a male of some kind to provide
right,
them with food.
Said they were taking care of them.
Well, the community was supposed to take care of them. The community didn't always do that. All through the law, there are continual and repeated the word's escaping me that I need, but
admonishments,
thank you very much, to take care of the widow, the orphan, and the sojourner in your community. You know, you're always supposed to take care of those people. They didn't always, so there are continual admonishments. Take care of the widow and the orphan soldier. So even though, like, Ruth goes back there knowing the widows are to be cared for, she doesn't know.
She's hoping,
yep, doesn't know. So she's counting on the community to live out of its own integrity, too. And they do. Okay, everybody, thank you very much. We'll see you tomorrow. We'll move on to Jesus and the Gospel of John.